You're listening to Australia's fastest growing podcast network. This is the Lifestyle Pod Network. You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson and this is episode 116. And I'm just off the phone from recording with our guest. Our guest today is Emily, who lives in Northern California. And we've just been chatting for almost an hour about her dream and interpreting it. And as you know, I never get to know anything about the dream until we make that call and start talking to the guests. So you hear it as I experience it. And of course, we go deeply into Emily's dream and uncover its interpretation. And towards the end, Emily then explains how it relates to her waking life. So it's a great one. There's lots and lots of interesting clues. It appears to be quite a simple dream at the beginning. It's all about a house that she's sorting out. But who is it that she discovers in the darkened hallway? And which animal does she meet when she goes outside? Lots of numbers in this dream as well, which are all deeply meaningful. So I know you're going to enjoy it. So I won't say much more other than give the website addresses, which I must give before we move over to the podcast guest of this month. My website, www.dream.net.au. And there you can find lots and lots of free resources and interesting stuff all about dreams. And you can also find out how to contact me to have confidential time with me, just you and me, one-on-one, over the phone or over Skype or over email, discussing your dream and finding out from your dream what your own unconscious blocks are that are stopping you from having the life that you want, and all sorts of other wonderful things as well. So if you want, after listening to Emily, something of what she's got from talking to me, you might like to consider booking 1 hour over the Skype or over phone with me to have a chat. Of course, our podcast guests receive their interpretations for free. That's in return for their wonderful contributions to all of you, our audience. You know, you bring a dream to the show and you benefit from that, and everybody else gets to benefit from understanding a little bit more about their own dreams, picking up tips as you go. But so www.dream.net.au for interesting stuff, my services, and also, of course, books, ebooks, and courses at my shop there, or my blog at www.janetheresa.com. That's Teresa without an H, or Facebook, or our podcast site, which has no W's. It is just thedreamshow.tv. And so here we go. Let's segue into what we've just recorded with Emily. Welcome to The Dream Show, Emily. How are you? How's your day been in Northern California? I believe that's where you are.
Yes, it's been wonderful. It's a beautiful day here. Sunshine, little wind, just gorgeous.
Oh, that sounds lovely. And is that a summery kind of sunshine or a wintry kind? It must be a summery kind of sunshine you've got there.
It is. It is. It's summery, and at night the fog comes in, so it really cools off. And then in the morning it burns off and gets heated up, and it's just a lovely cycle.
Oh, beautiful. I can almost smell it. That sounds so lovely. Mm-hmm. Now, as usual, I have no idea what dream you're going to anybody brings me, so the floor is yours, Emily.
Oh, thank you. Okay. I will just say the dream to you. It's a rather long one. The scene starts where my husband and I, we have moved into a new home. It's a older home in the 60s, and things are a little older and worn, not freshly new. And I look around, and I see we've moved a lot of things in this house, and I'm wondering where to put them. And we'll be having company that night, and so I need to be sure, well, I need to put them in places so I'll be ready. And, of course, I have to dust. And I'm sitting on the couch, and I see dust and dirt on the couch, so I'm removing cushions, and I'm dusting and vacuuming. And I want to hurry because my husband doesn't like the sound of the vacuum cleaner. And then I see some shelving, thin shelving on the wall, kind of aluminum, and I notice they're dusty. And I make a note that I need to get a different duster for that. And then I look around and I see there's other ways that we can arrange our furniture. And there's a big old wood stove in the middle of the floor. Kind of, for some reason, it looks like a 60s TV set to me, but it's a stove. And I think, well, we'll put a couch in front of it. And my husband's a little worried about wall space. And I tell him, don't worry about the wall space. We can put the furniture in the middle of the floor. And then I get the idea that we could actually divide this huge room in two and put our bed in the room and make a bedroom in one half and a living room on the other, because the view is so much more beautiful from here than it is from the bedroom. And as the dream continues in this location, I get more and more assertive. And I realize in the dream that I've never decorated my own home before. So this is real exciting for me. I think next we're going to need a rug. And suddenly I look over to another part of the house and I see a hallway that I hadn't noticed before. And it's dark. And I rush over to it because I'm excited, and I see there's a closet. And I open up the closet, and there's clothing in there that the former owner had left, and it's men's clothing. And I find this curious. And then I notice in this smaller hall that's darkened is a poker table, like an old-fashioned poker table, but kind of in the shape of a pool table with a green cloth, although I don't really see it's green, I just know it is. And as my eyes are adjusting to the darkness, I see in another corner of this hall a door that's slightly open, and there's light coming from the crack of the door. And I start pounding the table with my fist to kind of see if there's somebody behind the door. And I hear this male voice ring out, "You can't wake us during the day." And I find this really odd, and I don't know who this man is, and so I pound again on the table. And the door opens, and between 4 and 6 men come into this small room. And they're kind of like lumberjacks or men from the 1850s, the type you visualize on TV, sitting around playing poker. And I realized that they live here in that closet and come out to play poker. So I yelled to my husband, "We bought a haunted house." And I'm just really excited about this. Then there's a slight scene where there's 4 women, and they're in their 20s or 30s, and they're kind of 1920s women, clean cut, young, and they're sitting at the poker table. And this seems to give these men some discomfort, but they let them stay there. They don't usher them out. So then the scene changes, and I'm outside. And I believe I'm walking down a street. I have no recollection of what's around me. And all of a sudden, I find a snail. And I pick it up, and it's about the size of the palm of my hand. The snail fits in my hand, and it's a beautiful snail and shiny. And I realize that the snail belongs back in this darkened hallway. And I tell the snail, I say, "Well, I'm going to bring you back to where you belong." And then I'm back in front of the door. I'm still outside, and I'm in front of the door that will open up to go into this hall. And I notice there's a sign at the top, and it says 261 FBI. And I realize these men are part of the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, but they're really not undercover agents. And the last thing I recalled in the dream is that I'm inside, and I put the snail down, probably on that poker table. And that's the dream.
Wow, wonderful. I love it. And how long ago was the dream?
July 16th.
July 16th.
Of this year.
Of this year. So it's about 3 weeks ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So as we interpret the dream and talk about it, the dream always refers to the day or two before, mainly.
Uh-huh.
So that gives us the first clue. There's so much in this dream. It's wonderful. It's great. And what a lot of numbers to deal with as well. But I'm going to just jump straight in at the end there and just notice that there's a lot of cover and undercover. You know, if we go right to the end with the snail is a creature that generally lives inside its shell. and takes cover under the shell. And at the end of the dream, you found this snail outside and thought, oh, no, it actually belongs back in the house where you belong. So again, there's a sense of taking it undercover. And as you go back under cover of house with your snail that is kind of like double undercover, you notice above the door that 261 FBI, that these are FBI agents. And you notice that, oh, but they're not undercover agents. And if we just backtrack from that slightly, and there's a couple of kind of, there's three big points in the dream where there's a kind of male-female interaction. One, the first one that comes to, that really kind of strikes a bit of a conflict is when it's like, oh, I better finish this vacuuming because my husband doesn't like the sound of the noise. So it's kind of like, there's a bit of, and it, your husband is not your husband, but we're just staying within the drama of the dream here. The one that feels like you, that feels like Emily in the dream, is subservient to the husband. You know, I better get this job done because he doesn't want to hear all this noise happening. The next thing that happens with the men and the women is around the poker table, when it's that feeling of, oh, there's women around here. Is this going to be a problem? And then the men come out. And as you say, the men are not, they're not made to feel discomfort. Discomfort was the word you used. So it was kind of like, it's kind of okay, but I wasn't sure how the men were going to feel about these women sitting at the table. So there's a kind of question mark over subservience there as well. And then backtracking also slightly in the dream, at one point when you really get the hang of all this decorating and moving stuff, you suddenly say to yourself in the dream, now I'm getting assertive. Now I'm new to decorating and suddenly I've got all these ideas. So there's a kind of swing from subservience to assertiveness there. And that's also the point where you then go to explore the dark corners.
Exactly.
So without going any further, because we are going to go further at the moment, Emily, I just sort of want to draw attention to that kind of feeling in the dream of there's a kind of cover, undercover, subservience, assertiveness kind of thing going on. And it's that turning point in the dream where you suddenly feel really assertive and good, where you go to explore, you know, some things in the dark, which in a dream means some things that you know less about yourself, or things you tend to keep in the dark, which gloriously and wonderfully you actually bring into the light in the dream. So before we go any further, would you like to make any comments at this stage?
Not at the moment. No, this is wonderful.
Okay.
It rings so true. Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we'll go over some of the details. And for everybody listening in, I better put the whole dream in context by going back to the beginning of it first. You move into, it's a new home. But it's actually a 60s home. So it's not, as you said, not freshly new, but it's kind of new to you, but it's got some kind of feeling of the past or the 60s in it. So that's sort of the beginning of the dream. And your quest in the dream is to actually get everything ready, kind of put some sense of ownership on the house and get it ready so that you're open for business or for public. That's kind of like the beginning of the dream. So it's likely that this reflected in the day or two leading to the dream, a kind of new idea that you had, or a new way of being, or a new approach, not freshly new, to quote you in the dream, not freshly new. It's got some kind of throwback to the 60s. Now, that throwback to the 60s is either a throwback to the actual 1960s, assuming you were around then.
I was.
Oh, you were? Good. Okay. If you were older, and I sense you're not, it might be back to when I was 60, but I feel it's, you know, back to the 1960s. So there's some kind of connection with something from the 1960s, probably your own, you know, experiences that you are in some sense bringing into the present, rather than a sense of style in the 60s or attitude in the 60s that you're bringing forward. It's more about you. And so there's this thing happened a couple of days before the dream where you really thought, right, I'm really ready now to make these changes. I'm bringing some of myself from the 60s or my experiences forward. So this is new, but not freshly new, but I kind of like this. Now, let's organize this new approach or this new way of being. And a lot of that then centers around dusting, you know, so it's almost like, you know, dust is the remnants of the past, isn't it? Really?
That's right.
What dust is. So it's kind of like, I've got to get rid of all this stuff from the past. I want to know what to keep and what not to keep here. and we'll come into the couch and the shelves later. And then part of that past is, oh, I better hurry up and do this vacuuming because my husband doesn't like this. So there's a sense of, oh, I'm not completely free here to do or feel or launch myself in the way that I want because I'm very aware of other people's sensitivities, and I'm kind of primed, maybe from my experiences in the 1960s, I'm kind of primed to maybe overly take into account other people's feelings rather than just...
Mm-hmm. That is so true, because what comes to mind for me is during that time in the 60s, I always say I had a compulsion to clean. Uh-huh. And so I would clean the house for hours and hours. I was taking on that responsibility.
And looking back, was that for you, or was that looking back with a hindsight of wisdom, was that in order to please other people around you?
Oh, definitely. Yes, yes. You know, keep the house in order, keep the family in order.
Yeah, okay. So yeah. To keep not only the house in order and keep the family in order, but to actually effect a deeper level of kind of keeping the peace, which we'll go into in the dream.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why when you're then looking around the house, and I love it when you say in the dream, oh, maybe there's other ways to arrange things. And that kind of comes from you were vacuuming the couch. The couch was like the center point, and it kept coming back. And I wonder whether that's because, you know, in the 60s and at any stage in our lives, the couch kind of tends to represent the family. You know, that's where you all sit when you're little. You know, that's like,
that's right.
It's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's that shift in your dream from being worried about the couch to suddenly noticing the shelves, the aluminum shelves, and thinking, oh, I could maybe dust, I need a different duster or a different way to dust those. So something about those shelves, if you could just revisit that part of the dream with me and look up at those thin aluminum shelves, what kind of personality would you say those shelves had, or what are they for?
Well, I'm not sure what they were for. I think I wasn't sure in the dream because they came out almost like a shingle, kind of slanted out of the wall. But I knew under the dust they'd be really, really shiny and new.
Mm. Okay, so they've been covered up for a long time. And a shingle like a roofing shingle?
Yeah, about the size of a roofing shingle. It was maybe about 4 inches wide, if that large, and just kind of stuck to the wall like a bookshelf, but it protruded down into the shape of, oh gosh, like an oval or something at the other end.
Mm, so, in fact, would it you've been able to balance books on it okay?
No, probably not, because they probably would have slid right off, because they would come out and kind of curve down a little bit.
Yeah.
So they were not that deep either. I wish I had a word or another description for
That's
you.
That's all right. We've got shingle, which is an unusual word, so we might go in at that. Does shingle come up anywhere else in your life? Do you look back to the 60s? Does shingle mean something going back to the 60s for you?
Not at the moment. No.
It may be a play on word on single, a single and shingle as well.
Uh-huh.
And the 4 inches may be a reference to amount of time, like 4 years or something like that. So there's that feeling of, and this may be off, I'm just plumping for this one at the moment, of almost going back to when I was single or on my own or something like that. But there's a sense of, you see the potential of these shelves in the dream. It's like they've got so much dust on them. So this is something that's accumulated a lot of old stuff from the past. But you see the potential, and it's not just, I'll just do what I normally do and dust these shelves. It's like there must be a different way to do this. It's almost like you've got, at the time of this dream, the inkling of a different way to approach getting rid of some past baggage dust. So that you can find something and use it to a better purpose. And one of the things that you find out, or would find out when you dusted these shelves, was that you may need to either put them at a slightly different angle. So you may need to not only dust them, but change them slightly to put books on them, or repurpose them to some extent.
Uh-huh.
So we'll come back to that later. But what I really liked about that shelf part, and it may also be stuff that you shelved, you know, that you're coming back to and then you'll see, sure. Well, how can I? Yeah, is that it?
Yeah, that sounds, yes.
Stuff I've shelved, and it may be from the 60s, and it may be from 4 years ago, but it's kind of like probably both of those. As you say at the beginning of the dream, not freshly new, a bit of both. And it's like, you know, how can I, there's a different way to approach this. How can I repurpose it? Now, that is when everything begins to change in the dream, from the sort of mega cleaning approach and being careful of everyone, to you beginning to take the assertiveness. And you notice then the 60s TV set, which is also a stove. So again, there's that feeling of the family at the center of things. You've got the couch in front of it, the 60s TV set, which refers to the 60s and what a lot of us did in the 60s in families. And the stove, which should be the heartwarming place. It's the place where the family gather for heat in winter. So you've got all those kind of feelings of almost like the heart of the matter. And that's when you think, ah, not only is there a different way to dust the shelves, there's also a completely different way to approach decorating this room. I can move the bedroom into here. I can have this room in two bits, the bedroom and the living room, because there's a better view. That's the feeling you get. So it's like a major shift in approach and perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Which would have been occurring to you in the day or two before the dream, and some of it may have been hitting you consciously, and the rest of it may be, this is what's happening in the unconscious that you haven't totally touched. And that's the advantage of getting into the dream and go, oh, is all this happening down there in my unconscious? I can use this. So that's why you then get assertive and say, I am new to decorating. I've never had this opportunity before. I'm going to really, really go here. So we know at that point in the dream, you're not only recognized as a newer way to approach this new project in your life, but you're going to do it in a way that you've never done it before. You're feeling assertive about it. You're feeling good about it. And the potential feels huge. And the first thing you want to do is take the place where you normally go to bed into a place where the view is better. So, you know, for most people, the bedroom is where we go to bed and or we're intimate or whatever. And those of us that are interested in dreams, it's also the place where we dream.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, mm-hmm. It can also be the place where we are in touch with our unconscious. And I'm pulling in on that one for you, Emily, simply because later on there's the question about the lumberjacks that don't come out at day or don't come out at night or something. I can't remember. We'll get there. So there's that feeling of day and night and what goes on in dreams and what goes on in waking life.
Yes, absolutely.
So there's that feeling of, I want to bring something about my dream work or my unconscious self or my resting time or maybe my inner world, you know, my female world, my spirituality, my intuition, which we normally associate with lock that away in the bedroom for night. That's moon stuff. And in the dream, it's like, I want to bring that right into the central area of my being. You know, and I've got the living, which is like the sun, and I've got the bed, which is like the moon, and they're going to occupy exactly half each of where I'm coming from because the view is better here.
Oh, that is so right on. It Good. Really is.
Good. Shall I continue, or do you want to enlighten me with other details, or shall I keep going at the moment?
No, please keep going.
Okay. So with that great confidence and that fantastic shift in view, literal shift in view that you've got there, you're then ready to be excited by the dark hallway, you know, because most of us don't want to go to dark places at all. And as we all know, they're actually the places we should go because at the end of those dark corridors are the cracks of light, which you've literally got in your dream. They open that door and there's the crack of light, you know, and at the end of your dream, you even go outside. So it's like, wow, this is really getting some light on this. So with this confidence, you decide to explore the dark. Now, the hallway in a house, and as you've described it, it's a kind of passage between where you are and other opportunities, maybe just one more room, maybe several doors and rooms. The hallway isn't really a room in itself. It's a transience. It's a place to get. It's a way in which you move from where you are to the next place, which in your dream you can't see. And in some sense, that's why sometimes in a dream we will look at a hallway, although you can't really say, you can't use universal symbols, you know, the same symbol for everybody. We can often look at a hallway, particularly a dark hallway, as being metaphorically a bit like a birth. It's like we're going down the birth canal. We're going down to find and discover something brand new down here that you haven't looked at before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what you...
I was going to say, and it's so wonderful because I'm not afraid.
Yes. Yes, that's right. It's wonderful. And you were excited and you were curious as well. It's not afraid. And those are really, and those are probably emotions that around this area may be quite fresh to you. When you go down there, one of the first things you see is a closet. Now, so that we've got, remember at the start we were talking about cover and undercover?
Yeah.
And the snail. And so a closet, in a sense, is a place where things are behind a door as well. They're kind of closed away.
That's right, hidden away.
Hidden away, yeah. And what we find hidden away is men's clothing. So it's almost like we've got everything in a nice balance here, and we're feeling assertive, and Emily's now into seeing a symbol for the male side of herself, the men's clothing.
Mm-hmm.
The male side of myself is something that's, although I have of course been in contact with it, I have largely hidden away some part of myself in a closet. Clothes are like the how we show ourselves to the world, the images we use. I'll wear this today to give an impression of this, or I'll wear this today to give an impression of that. I'll cover my nakedness, I'll wear this. Look, this is who I am. There's that feeling of you've hidden away some ways in which you can project the male side of yourself in the world.
Yeah.
Now, that male side of the world is not only in your dream assertiveness, and stretching back to your 60s childhood ways of, you know, as a child or young person in the 60s, given the description that you gave there of keeping everything clean, keeping everything right for the family, being aware of everyone's sensibilities, there's, you know, a person when they're doing that becomes very connected with their feminine side or their female side, but tends to put away assertiveness or equality or waking life, doing stuff out in the world in a strong, courageous kind of way, because that's the job of other people in your life. That's what you're taught. That's what you were taught back then. So it's like, okay, here's the clothes. Wow. What can I do here? So then we come across this curious sign of the poker table. What's your association to poker? Do you have any?
I don't. Well, when I thought about the poker table, I was thinking of risk taking, because there's a lot at stake at a poker table when you play the game.
Yes.
And again, you talk about the undercover, the poker face, you know, in the whole bidding, in the anteing. It's a whole other way of undercover in a way.
Beautiful. Oh, well analyzed. That's really good. Okay. So you've got that personal symbol to you, and that most of us would agree with also. We'd probably have the same feeling of it. So you encounter this area of yourself in the darkness that is associated somehow with your male side, which has been closeted away. And it's like, whoa, if I bring this out, because poker's also a very male game as well.
Yeah.
Traditionally. Mm-hmm. So see, if I bring this part of myself out, it's like it's all about taking risks in the world, and it's all about keeping a poker face. It's all about being undercover. So there's some extent where maybe you have, to some extent, sometimes brought out or thought you've been bringing out your male side, but you've done it in a kind of undercover way. You've maybe taken risks in the outer world, but you've done it in an undercover way, like almost like, oops, that wasn't me, that was him. You know, I kind of maybe just even be a little bit manipulative about this or something. I'm not entirely sure, but there's that feeling, and or a feeling that you have that that if you're going to really bring your inner male out of the cupboard, so to speak, that you can't just let him be open and honest. He's got to have a poker face. He's got to be undercover. Men work in mysterious ways. And, you know, if I'm going to show that side of myself, is it going to be authentic? How am I going to feel? How do I feel about risk taking? Probably opening up a whole lot of stuff that you were taught when you were young about taking risks and not showing your hand. There's another card game kind of thing there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then from there, you then notice that's when you notice the door at the end of the hallway with a little light behind it, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's then almost like, okay, so you're opening up a bit more to find out more about this male side of yourself that you've kind of hidden away. And strangely enough, there you see them as lumberjacks.
Mm-hmm. Lumberjacks or Western men back in the 1850s or 60s in the Western towns, when they used to play poker, wearing jeans, suspenders, that sort of thing, or plaid shirts. I mean, obviously not current.
As such are the many beliefs that were passed as children, from generations before the great grandfather teaches your grandfather teaches your father teaches you, the handed down beliefs about things that we grow up believing. There's something around that there, but as you say, very Western. So there may also be a clue there that you may be trying to do something Eastern orientated. And there's this kind of Western influence there that how can I use my inner male more in the world, but not in a Western way, more in an Eastern way? And also with a lumberjack, there's that feeling of, even though you've described them more like cowboys, frontier town men, maybe pioneers, I don't know. There's that feeling that they're lumberjacks, they're workers. They're not men using their intellect or their insight, they are workers.
That's right. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah.
They are. Yeah, they're very manual labor. Yeah.
So there's that sense of somehow there of your feelings about manual labor and where you stand with respect to that. And they come to the table, and that's when you then see the women sitting there, and they're all maybe four women. So there's that number four again. Your shelf was about 4 inches. These are four women. So the number can be anything in a dream. It can be 4 weeks, 4 months, when you were four, your own personal association with the number four, but it's often 4 years ago. So, there may have been something that happened 4 years ago, which I will ask you about later, that may relate to this. And these women were at the poker table were aged 20 to 30s. So that can be like 2 to 3 years ago as well, or it could be referencing when you were in your 20s and 30s. So 4 years ago may have touched upon something that was happening for you when you were in your 20s and 30s. So there's this feeling in the dream of there's the manual labor, Western philosophy, beliefs that I've been handed down since childhood about maybe assertiveness and protection and cover and all of that stuff, is now coming to the table together. And the question in the dream is, how will the lumberjacks feel about these women being there? And they weren't overly ecstatic, but nobody was put at discomfort. So it's kind of like, that's a good step. okay. So it may have been about 4 years ago that you may have picked up something from when you were in your 20s and 30s and run with it again, and you're gradually feeling a little bit comfortable about it. And it's something to do with balancing the Western or laboring, working, manual worker kind of thing and taking risks, because that's your card table thing there. You get excited at that stage and you say to your husband, we've bought a haunted house, isn't that great? Which means haunted in our dreams often is a kind of dream way of saying that we're haunted by our past to some extent. So there's that again, as you said to me earlier, isn't it wonderful? I wasn't frightened. I was curious. I was excited. And here you are again. It's like, yay, we've bought a haunted house. So in the dream, it's like, yeah, I've just realized I've been haunted by my past. Isn't this exciting? I'm going to find out what it is. Yay. And your eyes adjust, because the more we look into our unconscious mind, the more we are able to see. And I love the way that you pound the table. And I wondered even then whether there's a kind of play on words, because I don't think the currency in America has ever been pounds. But of course, in Britain, Australia, you would know from, it'll be in your general knowledge that pound is also a currency.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking of the financial betting that you do at a poker table. I don't know. But of course, pounds also is a unit of weight for you, isn't it, as well?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Very common. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's something about so when you pound the table, you're often adding weight to your argument, aren't you? You're thumping the table and go, yes, this is how it must be. It's like, I'm adding weight to this as well.
Yes.
And you draw them out. I'm going to know this male side of myself more. There were 4 to 6 men. So again, we've got that number 4.
4 again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're maybe going back, and it could be to when you were age 4 to 6, but I still feel 4 to 6 years ago. This is something that you've been grappling with. And that's the point at which you then go outside. Now, when you go outside in a dream, it's often, particularly when you're going from a dark place that you did in the dream to the outside, it's often when you're kind of coming out about something, if only to yourself. It's like, I'm bringing this out into consciousness. I'm bringing this out into the light of day. I get this. And that's why you then look in the palm of your own hand and there's a snail that's larger than life, this snail, because it's like you're really noticing it. Oh, this big thing that I haven't seen before. This summarizes it all. This has been me. Maybe it's just about the shell that I have been undercover and I need to come out. Maybe it's more than that. Maybe I've made a lot of slow progress over the years because I've been undercover. But I'm going to take the snail back to where it belongs. I'm going to take it back into the house that I own, that I am working to redecorate and make my own and repurpose in an assertive and better way. And that's when you see, as you say, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which is you being the ultimate dream detective and noticing all of this. So we're left with that 261 and my brain's going, well, that's either a number that's meaningful to Emily, 261, or it's like February 1961.
Ah, okay.
Is February 1961 meaningful to you?
That was the year that my family moved quite suddenly. We just moved from one house to another, from one town to the next. Mm. And so it was the ending of, you know, that part of childhood. And I was 10 at the time. Mm. So that.
Okay, so looking back now, I mean, that is very, very precise, 261, February 1961. So that very precise time that you can look back to, the ending of childhood, and it was also a very sudden change. Looking back now with hindsight, with when we've been talking about undercover and being aware of other people's sensitivities and everything that we've been talking about there, can you now see a connection between today and or what you're wanting to achieve now and that particular time? What conflict or solution arose for you when you changed house in February 1961?
Oh, my gosh.
Don't think, Emily. Just whatever pictures in your mind. Something is just picturing in your mind.
Well, I was going to have a new boyfriend. Mm. And I took the assertiveness and I asked him, would you like to be my boyfriend? And he said, yes. And I said, sorry, we're moving. We're sunsetting. Oh, gosh.
And how did he respond to that? Can you remember?
Well, yeah, he said, yes, he would have liked that.
Go on.
No, but being young and having, you talk about this, you know, I was powerless over it. We were moving. Mm. We were too young to date or to drive. You know, a 10-year-old infatuation. Oh.
But did you have that feeling then that was probably the first really assertive thing you did with another male?
Oh, more than likely, yes.
Yeah.
And actually, I remember when I won a race, I was the fastest runner, I guess, in first or second grade, and I beat the boys. And I was really admonished for that because girls don't beat the boys.
So you had to become the snail.
Yes. Well, yeah, I probably have to become the snail. Uh-huh.
You had to go slowly.
And really hide my talent, you know? Yeah.
Oh, that's absolutely wonderful. Well, that's definitely all here in your dream. And it's also a story that, and I know there's more, but it's also a story that a lot of women listening in will relate to. I have personally spoken to and worked with a lot of clients, women later in life who are still struggling with that one where they were very, very talented or very gifted or even just plain bright. And were taught at school that's, you know, you've got to let the boys win. And not just in the races, but in exams and in life in general, you've got to step back, you know, and so that a lot of people that I work with have found themselves in that position of always sabotaging themselves at the last moment so that, you know, that maybe their partner can can win before they do, or maybe they can get the limelight, or maybe I shouldn't be this bright. It's a struggle for a lot of people, and there may be some of that in you. Yeah. So you've got that point, Emily, where you've looked back and said, okay, that was probably the first time when I was 10, young though it was, that I was not only assertively said what I wanted, was assertive with another male, but also had to then be subservient to my family and move when they said move. And I lost the outcome of being assertive was that I ended up having to go with, which was the only option at the time, but, you know, having to toe the family line and at the same time being told that, you know, you can't win the race. That's not what it's about for girls. So on many levels, you started to go undercover then. And there's a sense undercover too. Like the FBI are incredibly clever, we hope.
Yeah.
And they go undercover, and in their everyday lives, then it's just occurring to me now, in their everyday lives, most of them aren't allowed to say what they do. Oh, what do you do? Oh, I'm a clerk for the local company. You know, I'm not very bright, or I just work for the lower rungs of government or whatever. And they don't have any opportunity to say, actually, I'm really, really bright. I'm really clever, and I work for the FBI.
Right. That's true, isn't it? Yeah.
So yes. in a sense, in at 261 FBI Street, that's kind of started for you in early 1961. You went undercover. You kept your incredible talent and brightness, and you've been parading as lesser than you are.
Oh, I can agree with that.
Although there's a lot. Yeah, go on.
I do have to admit, I did watch a Sherlock Holmes episode the night before.
Ah.
So there's part of the detective, I think, that came in there as well. But I'm thinking the FBI also, has a very risky game to play.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
So if I bounce on that you've just said there, the FBI also have a risky game to play, do you feel that when you have brought your inner male out into the world and done, whether it's business or assertiveness or whatever, that it's been more like an FBI, a hidden game, a poker face? It's like, I'm not going to show the world how intelligent I am. I'm not going to show them my real FBI qualities. So I've got to use those clever qualities to be really, you know, I've really got to tune into the cleverest qualities I've got to kind of work the situation here so that I maybe get what I want. Whereas actually there's a much quick, less like a snail. There's actually a much quicker way to do it, which is just forget all that. This is what I want. This is what I'm doing. This is who I am. But you've gone a kind of complicated, long, let's play the risks by being poker faced, by keeping my cards close to my chest, by trying to manipulate it this way, by, you know, doing
and,
the,
and
you know,
exactly, and not showing my feelings, which is probably a very male thing as well.
Yes, and yes. Mm-hmm. Whereas, in fact, there are wonderful things that we can use our inner male to, you know, we can express our inner male in the world in ways which do reflect our emotions and feelings, you know, which integrate with our female. So you've got your inner male, your inner female, and an ideal world, they don't go out as two separate halves. They integrate and work together to become something even better, like there's a synergy.
Yeah.
So then that brings back to your room, where you've got the bedroom and you've got a division down the middle and you've got the lounge room. Maybe it's better if you take the division out of the middle and you integrate those to move them forward.
Yes. Yes, and like you were saying earlier, and you were so right, it's half the bedroom and half the living area. And to make it a whole one area without the barrier.
Yes.
You know, the room is big enough to do that. And in doing so, there's a much better view out the window than in a back bedroom somewhere.
Yeah. And you're also seeing, if you take away the partition in the living room, you've got the whole view from the bed and the whole view from the lounge room area, rather than still half of a magnificent view and half of a magnificent view.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And something else just struck me about that. I'm just trying to remember what it was. No, it's gone. So although there's a lot more, Emily, would you like to maybe relate that to any amount of what's going on for you that you're happy to share?
I think some of it, yes. I can't think of anything from 4 years ago, but I recently completed a two-year program to get certified in a certain area, and I haven't quite gotten my feet off the ground and running with it yet. And it does involve, it was very interesting to comment about the Eastern versus the Eastern way versus the Western way. Because on the one hand, I do want to go out and do and start to get some clients, and but on the other way, I'm very happy meditating and being very quiet and introspective. And so the marrying of those two and the risk-taking that would involve making phone calls and having that confidence in myself that I do have these abilities and these talents. So a lot of what you said really fits in with what has been going on. You know, to get the education, but then not to quite know how to go out in the world with it.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's partly not knowing how to go out in the world with it because, as you said, that involves the courage of phoning or giving up some of your private reflective time. And it also may be at a deeper level, the kind of saboteur that, oh, you know, as we referenced earlier, I can't go out in the world with it because then I'll win the race.
Yeah.
You know, the female, my conditioning is to hold back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, you know,
very much so.
Yeah. Was it a 4-year course?
It was a 2-year course.
It was a 2-year course 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. I've just remembered in relation to that what it was that I just thought a minute ago that I wanted to say. So if you go back to that room, the lounge room with a lovely view, and you've got the lounge room on one side, the partition, and the bedroom on the other side, you know, using that one big space that you did in the dream. And then you could say, well, the lounge room is the waking life or consciousness, and the bedroom is the dreaming life or your unconscious mind. And obviously the ideal with, as we're doing in this conversation, whether it's through dream work or any modality of understanding yourself better, is to take what you learn from your unconscious mind out into your waking world and to accept that what you experience in your waking world is being taken into your unconscious mind for processing too. So there's necessarily should be a two-way, an integration at that level as well. So as well as being the integration of inner male and inner female, we need to have an integration of the unconscious mind and the conscious mind in terms of it being a two-way process rather than a partition. And then what you described there was kind of like that. It's like, well, I've got all these things ready to go, but you know, maybe sometimes I just want to partition off the waking life or the consciousness and just enjoy my reflective time and keep that separate. You know, and, you know, I'm listening to you and thinking, I can't see a problem in that because you can say, oh, this is the time on Wednesdays and Thursdays or from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. or whatever it is. This is my quiet meditative time, you know, and you can still have that.
So it's a matter, yes, that makes so much sense. It's a matter of scheduling. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but that it can make sense, but it doesn't occur to you when your programming is revolving around what you feel that you shouldn't do, you know?
Mm. Oh, sure.
Mm.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because that would be the barrier, the block, the unconscious one that's coming up.
Mm.
And even though I may think, oh, I'm very conscious of this, I probably am not really conscious of it.
Yeah. Isn't that lovely? But we automatically say, oh, we are conscious of it, but we don't realize that it's deeper than that, that we can become more conscious of it. Because that programming, particularly from childhood, is just so automatic. You know, we just are so cut off from seeing other things because of the way that we were. You know, we're all victims of that. We're all brought up in different ways. So do you have any particular questions about any of that, or should we move to some alchemy?
I just have a question in terms of the snail, because if we can revisit that just for a moment, because it seems like a special snail.
Mm.
And I think about what came to mind for me with it was the spiral in the snail's shell. Because I say, why a snail and not a frog?
Mm.
Or another little animal? Because my dream manufactured this purplish kind of a glowing snail.
Mm.
I mean, it wasn't an ordinary one.
Mm. What does the feeling purple give you? What does purple mean to you?
My first association is royalty, a specialness, a spirituality.
Mm. That's lovely. And the spiral, do you have, what feelings do you have around a spiral? Or what knowledge do you have about a spiral?
I don't have a lot of knowledge about the spiral, but I think of it as a cycle. Just as a spiral turns, I think you start at the beginning, and then I'm not sure if you lose where the beginning is, but it's kind of an infinity. You know, maybe a recycling.
Yeah. So what you're talking about is going down, just so I can be clear, you're going from like the big end of the spiral where the snail can poke its head out, and you're going back down the spiral, and you're coming to the beginning point, and you're wondering whether it then opens out and continues, or whether there's a point before the beginning. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
So the cycle you're talking about is not the turn of the spiral, but are there many spirals that go back in time? That's what you're saying to me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, more 3D, not 2D, right.
Yeah, okay. Because what we're doing here is working with your, you know, your unique feelings and perception of the snail. Partly I'd say, yes, it was, and I would totally expect it to be very much not an ordinary snail. I would totally expect it to be really, really special. And I would not only expect it to be really special, but I would expect it to be really talented, to be able to run faster than all the boys, and to be able to do all these kind of clever intellectual feats, because the snail is a part of you. So the fact that you saw it in the dream as really, really special, as like, yes, this is the special part of myself that I've hidden or that I hide. Right. So that's one part of it. And it's glowing. It's like it's got this light around it, which is the light that you have, you know, kept under the bushel or whatever, or kept under cover. And as you say, it relates to purple, which to you is royalty or spirituality. So again, it's like the very best that I can be, something really special and particularly spiritual that I don't always show. And then that spiritual element, because you've connected it with cycles on a grand scale, not on a small scale, not on a day-to-day cycle or a year-to-year, but you're looking lifetime to lifetime, or Big Bang, or what happened before the Big Bang. You're looking kind of cosmically. You're in connection. Now, I love the way that your dream does that, because it's almost like a part of your, whether it's your divine self or your unconscious mind or whatever, it's a part of yourself that is saying, look, Emily, you are so much bigger than this one lifetime. In this one lifetime, you have had this conditioning as a 60s child to go undercover. And, you know, what have you been talking to yourself about fulfilling promises bigger than that? You know, do you feel you have a spiritual objective, a divine mission, a connection to beyond, whether it's before this lifetime with your vision of the spiral, whether it's more beyond this lifetime? If this life that you are experiencing is a tiny, tiny bit of consciousness compared to who you really are, then that dream is like saying, and your feeling about the spiral is saying, okay, look, if it's hard to convince you on a day-to-day basis of coming out of a shell, can we look at this on a grander scale?
On a grander scale, absolutely. Oh, that's.
Okay. And there's also that sense with the current spiral of the snail, you know, before you go back to the grander scale, there's that sense of the spiral that, you know, you go down the big end where the snail pokes its head out, and you go back and back and back, and you reach that small point. When the snail's first born, it's got that, it creates just a tiny, tiny little small point. And that small point, everything about the spiral grows on that. You know, the next bit is a bit bigger and a bit bigger and bigger. So it's almost like a metaphor too for you are conditioned with a certain belief when you're born, or a certain way of looking at the world, and everything grows on that. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, but it's all built on the same thing, and it goes around in cycles, and it goes around in cycles, and it goes around in cycles, and that becomes your particular mortal coil, maybe, it occurs to me, your particular, you know, vision. And then your dream shows you, hey, not only are you special and talented and wonderful in this lifetime, but look on the grander scale. So if there's anything that then, and we often have animals in our dreams when we are going through change, and we're really tuning in our dreams to, rather than the, funnily enough, rather than the intellectual side or the analytical side, to your instinctive side. So you've got an animal, we see animals as instinctive. So if there's anything that, any strong symbol that you would really like to go with the alchemy, Emily, because you're attracted to the snail, is that sense that you hold in your hand. We talk about your palm and your destiny, you know, palm readers and holding your destiny in your hand, and you hold the snail in your hand.
True.
Yeah. So there's that feeling that you can revisit that awesome part of that snail energy in your dream and go, yes, even if I find it difficult to overcome conditioning in my life now around these issues that we've talked about, if I can feel that I've got this snail in my hand and I can connect to the grander purpose, and I just remembered earlier in your dream interpretation, we were talking about repurposing the room too, then, you know, you may have that connection. Well, I should ask if you've got any other questions before I go into the alchemy. Have you got any other questions, Emily?
No, I don't. No, let's go into the alchemy because I think that's so important with dream work.
Yeah, thank you.
And I just love that you always give somebody the dream alchemy to do.
Yeah, thank you. It's really transformative. You know, it's one thing getting the dream and understanding it, and that does create shifts. But doing the alchemy is what really, really works. And early in the dream, I was going to work the alchemy around the room and the partition and the view and all of that. And you might still want to go and do something with that yourself. But I think because of your attraction to the snail and everything we've just discussed there, and that's where your feeling connection was, I think I'd like to work with the snail if you would. So is that okay with you?
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes.
Yeah. So I'd like the feeling of somehow connecting with that grander design. Yeah, and isn't a spiral is a basic design for all nature too. Anyway, connecting with that grander design. But I'd also like to do something about getting the snail or the energy, which is you, out of the shell.
Mm-hmm.
In some sense. So would you like to work with your dream in visualization, in affirmation, in writing, in artwork, in movements? Have you got a particular area you'd like to work with?
Visualization. And I was going to say all of the above.
Okay, all of the above.
But anything but the movement.
Okay.
The writing's great. The visualization is wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to give you two. I'll give you the one first to do later. We'll get you to do a little writing. We'll get you to do a dialogue with the snail. And for everyone listening in, what a dialogue is that you get a piece of paper and a pen, or you get your keyboard and you turn off your phone and all other distractions for 10 minutes. It only takes 10 minutes. And you basically just write snail, me, in this particular one I'm going to go for. And you just have a quick talk, and you write or type as fast as you can. It's like no brain involved. You get your unconscious mind. It's like stream of consciousness. And what you do when you do that is you're dialoguing with a symbol from your own dream. And because you're doing it fast, your unconscious will often reveal more. Sometimes the dialogue stops there. Sometimes you actually get some kind of healing or integration in the way that you and the symbol come to some kind of wonderful integrative conclusion. So what I'd get you to do is talk to the snail on paper, and it's only about a sentence each. And don't think about it till you do it, Emily. And we'll start with the snail saying, have you been inside my lovely home?
Oh.
Okay. So that's for later. Now the visualization, I'll run it past you first to see what you think. We'll co-create it and then you can go and do it. I'm thinking that we visualize the snail on the palm of your hand, and we even make it slightly bigger, and that the purple glowing feeling actually comes from the snail and actually kind of encircles your whole palm, and even, because it's a good energy, kind of runs up your arm and feels your body, and you actually feel this essence within you. And that you then look at the snail, and as you do that, the snail's shell opens almost like two halves, like a bivalve or a mollusk, you know, opening up and revealing inside, not the snail, but just more, I think, of this beautiful purple glowing light. And that for you would represent the grander design of things. It's like it's almost ethereal. It's just an energy that is the grander purpose. Does that make sense, or would you want to change that in some way?
No, it makes a lot of sense. I could have him standing and Michelle kind of split apart.
Mm-hmm.
To see the light. I like when you were talking about it going through my palm and up through my body. There's something about light that's very healing.
Mm.
So I like that a lot.
Absolutely.
I was afraid you were going to say, look at his insides. And I couldn't imagine that.
No, I don't think I'll take you there. And that way we've then got with the kind of, you know, the fact that we make his shell two halves and open them up. It's a bit like opening the closet door as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And then the two halves, obviously, male, female,
yes.
Conscious, unconscious, the whole gamut.
Yeah.
So no, that's wonderful.
The bedroom and
wonderful.
The living room. Okay, let's run you through it and see how we go. So close your eyes. So here's the beautiful snail in the palm of your hand. And just feel that energy in your hand. It feels so warm and spiritual and purple and good. And actually, look at the snail. It's getting bigger and bigger, but lighter and lighter. And you can feel that purple glowing energy seeping into your palm of your hand and up your arm and into your body. You can feel it in your heart, and it's now all around your body, this beautiful purple, spiritual, glowing, expansive, grand design, purpose-filling, divine kind of light that's spilling now out of your body and into, oh, as far as it can cosmically reach. And it feels so good. And now you look at the snail and you notice that it's opening its shell almost like little butterfly wings or little doors that are clasping and opening up. And they open up like just two halves. And what you see inside is the more intense, most beautiful, purple, glowing, really special, beautiful light just beaming out. And any time you want to be reminded of this, you just feel the energy in your palm, because it's always, always there. How does that feel?
And just wonderful. That's a wonderful visualization. I really like it.
That's good.
Yes.
So as you probably know, Emily, a lot of the work was done just in that one. And it works really best if you can do that around 20 times a day, because it doesn't take that long, for a couple of weeks. And then after that, just twice a day, night and morning, for as long as you wish and whenever you wish. And just see what happens. And, you know, and you've got a lot of understanding from that dream to take forward as well. Lots of light.
Oh, absolutely. 20 times a day for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
And then after that, twice a day.
Yes.
Wow.
So
that sounds wonderful.
You can do by putting something like, you know, 20 beads in a jar and taking one out every time you do it. You'll find that even though I didn't time that, it probably took us about 30 or 45 seconds to do that. The more fluent you become with it, you'll get it down to just a few seconds, because you'll get it down to just contacting the feeling. And then that 20 times a day will not seem a burden. In fact, it will feel like a joy. Oh, I'm going to do my purple light now.
I'm going to do it as soon as I hang up.
Okay, that's lovely. Well, thank you so much for sharing that beautiful dream today, Emily.
Well, thank you very much, Jane.
I'm sure you enjoyed that, and I'm sure there was plenty of take-home insight for everyone listening in. We always get something to take away from other people's dreams for us personally, as well as lots of tips and understandings and insights about how to approach a dream. So remember, if you'd like to be a guest on the show yourself, please contact me. And if you'd like to talk to me confidentially about your dream, go to www.dream.net.au, and it's very easy to find out where to go from there. And you might find that your employer, whether you're in public or private sector, may be able to help you or fully pay for your consultations with me as well, and all that information is there as well. So the next show is in 4 weeks time, and so I'll have a wonderful month till then, and I'll see you then for another episode of The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.
The Dream Show is a production of Jane Teresa Anderson for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one at lifestylepodnetwork.com.